Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Monday, the 20th of April. Very nice to have you with us. It's 4:20 and where are your children? It's very nice to have you here. Roundtable at WAMC.org if you would like to be a part of our conversation. It will be it'll be fun. It'll be free-ranging.
Like chicken.
Like much like a chicken.
Or that's children right. In some places.
Yes, yes, that's absolutely. Right.
That isn't your chicken.
Right.
How would you know? Let me introduce the panel to you. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Political consultant Libby Post joins us. Good morning,
Libby. Hello.
And SUNY Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo.
Happy to be here.
Makes up the trio this morning. All right, let's go to what's happening in the world and what was happening while we were away over the weekend and enjoying ourselves. Let's begin with the boat tragedy, the migrant boat tragedy. This is just a horrible story. Hundreds of migrants are feared dead as a ship capsized off the Libyan coast. Hundreds of people were feared dead on Sunday after a ship crowded with migrants capsized and sank in the Mediterranean, as the authorities described a grisly scene of bodies floating and submerging in the warm waters, with the majority of the dead apparently trapped in the ship at the bottom of the sea. The fatal shipwreck may prove to be the Mediterranean's deadliest migrant disaster ever, and is only the latest tragedy in Europe's migration crisis. And I guess that is really the where we should focus our discussion as to that crisis that puts people in this in this predicament.
Yeah, that's really what it's all about. I mean, when you think about it, it really is the fact that people are so desperate to get out from under where they are. That they'll do anything, including buck the odds. And they know what those odds are because they keep reading about this. And these folks were locked in the bottom. That's what that information is coming out. They were literally locked in the bottom of the boat, had no chance at all. I think the last thing I read was that there were like 26 people who they had rescued. And the hundreds went down.
Up to possibly 950 people were on the boat.
Yeah. And, you know, if you don't fix the exigency of getting out from under where they are, and their families at risk and they at risk, this thing is never going to change.
Okay, we've been in this situation before. In World War II, we had people desperate to get out of, say, Germany. And the United States did not respond right, and Europe did not respond right, and we have yet to do it. Migrants and refugees are a huge problem in the world. The United States, for one thing, has to step up. We don't take them. We don't take refugees. We took a handful of them during the Bosnian War. They went to Scandinavian countries and Australia and Germany. And in this case, it looks like the EU is finally, now that we have almost 1,000 people dead, they're going to have a meeting and say, hey, maybe we should do something about this. Yeah, we should. And the United States should either open up its doors, heaven forbid, that we let refugees in, or support the countries that are taking them in, which we don't do. I would like my tax dollar to go to that. It's outrageous.
But there, of course, are plenty of people who will NIMBY it.
Right.
And who will say, okay, that's a good idea, Rosemary, but not here. Not in my town, because they'll take jobs away from other people. Look, I'm all with you. I think everything you just said is exemplary and correct. But the reason that it doesn't happen is that there is sometimes fierce objection to taking them.
And not just in the United States. There have been stories written about Lebanon, which has been inundated by Syrian refugees, in Italy, where people are coming, of course, right up from northern Africa. And they are less able to take people than we are. And so the result is you have 1,000 people dead at a time. So don't say to me, oh, that's horrible and such a tragedy. We're helping to cause it, because we, as the international community, have not provided a solution to refugees and migrants.
Well, there'll be somebody listening who will say, okay, but when you open the doors, won't that then be the preferred route for people to come? In other words, if you have a chance to come to the United States, won't the United States, and you say, well, would you rather go to? They'll say, no, I want to go to the United States, and then you have a different kind of problem. I'm not making the argument against it, Rosemary. Don't get me wrong. I'm just simply saying there's always unintended consequences with everything that you do.
Well, I have two responses. One is that many Europeans do not want to come to the United States. The Bosnian refugees, for example, would much have preferred to stay in Europe. So that's questionable. And number two is, would it be so horrible? Would it be so horrible? These are middle-class people coming out of Syria, for example. They're not desperate, uncontributing members of society. Wouldn't it be better to let them in and integrate them rather than to let them die in the sea?
The answer is, of course.
Mm-hmm. Right. But what will happen,
right,
and I'm not saying that this is right because it's not, people from Syria, they have Arabic last names. They will be terrorized for being perceived as being Muslim because of the...
Well, they are Muslim.
Right. But the perception and what will happen here in this country, can you imagine if a bunch of Syrians are relocated to Oklahoma?
Yeah. I mean, I do understand the political problems with it. We don't even let Hispanics in, who are our neighbors and who do not take our jobs. They take jobs we don't want to do, and we give resistance to that. So certainly I understand the problem. But letting 1,000 people at a clip die because they're desperate.
Mm, right.
I read a story this weekend about the number of refugees out of Syria. It's approaching 25% of the total population. So somebody wrote, shouldn't somebody lead these guys and they go take their country back? And I mean, you know, you can understand the numbers certainly suggest that. But no, these are not soldiers. They're not monsters. They're not criminals. They're just regular people who want to live.
All you have to do is watch last night, 60 Minutes. They did a piece.
That's right.
On who was responsible for the sarin gas attack.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was horrific. And it looks like it was government sponsored.
Yep.
I wouldn't put it past him for a minute. And so lead these people. You know, they just want to get out and get to a better life for their kids.
They want their kids to have a good life. I mean, these are really good people. It's not like the criminals who flooded out of Cuba. Remember that in the mid-70s?
Right.
Also dying in numbers in boats. At least we sent our Coast Guard out to protect them a little bit, which is the least that the European Union should be doing. There were stories 2 weeks ago saying this is the start of the migrant season because it's gotten warm enough to go do it. And still this happens 2 weeks later. Unbelievable.
The Spain Prime Minister saying, as Europeans, we are gambling with our credibility if we aren't able to stop these dramatic situations that are happening now on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I mean, that sums it up.
We go crazy about ISIS that kills, what is it now, 24 people. Horrible, don't get me wrong, beheading them, but 700. Awful.
Yeah, but there are some major differences in what happened here. When you get guys with swords cutting people's heads off on videos because they want to scare everybody in the rest of the world, that's another whole story, and it's a different story, that's all.
Let's take a break. We'll be back and talk more. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Habitat Post and Beam, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, designing and manufacturing energy-efficient post and beam homes and additions throughout the Northeast since 1972. Postandbeam.com. Ashokan Center, a classroom in the wild offering environmental outdoor education and living history programs for schools, ashokancenter.org. And from Albany's Downtube Bicycle Works, thanking everyone for their support as they work to recover from the building fire. Facebook for current service hours and location, downtubebicycleworks.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable for this Monday morning. Very nice to have you with us, and we're discussing a wide range of issues, and we welcome you to join in on that discussion. Roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage, wamc.org/roundtable. Today's post is 4/2015, and it's because that is today's date. It's simple as that. WAMC.org/rent. Right.
It's amazing how that works.
We're going to help you crack that code. WAMC.org/roundtable. Fascinating. Well, let's see. I'm going to put those two together. So we were talking about ISIS. So let's go to the. Let's talk for a moment about the ISIS video. The Islamic State released a video on Sunday that appears to show fighters from its branches in southern and eastern Libya executing dozens of Ethiopian Christians, some by beheading and others by shooting, prefaced by extensive speeches and interviews that appear to take place in the Islamic State strongholds in Syria and Iraq. The video of the killings, if confirmed, would be the first evidence that the group's leaders in those countries are coordinating, with fighters under the group's banner in those parts of Libya, compounding fears of its expansion across the Mediterranean.
Happy Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is just unbelievable stuff. And, you know, it doesn't take any human being a lot to project themselves into this kind of situation. And it's interesting because the ISIS people do seem intent, whatever their motives are, and I suspect I know their motives, which is to alarm people to the point where we put our boots on the ground in order to stop them so that they can then claim that they are protecting their populations in a way, you know, that nobody else has. And I don't know what you do about it, because if you don't go in, there are these scenes and they will continue to happen. They're horrific. It's as bad as it gets.
I hope we don't go in. I think there's a mounting call for war. And we have been stuck in the quagmire of the Mideast for a long time. Fareed Zakaria, in his show on CNN this weekend, talked a lot about the opportunity cost of getting involved in the Middle East again. We are not doing anything in the Pacific. That was supposed to be the whole goal. And China's doing stuff that
Huge.
We need to be paying attention to. Mm-hmm. We're just simply not involved. And it's because we're still stuck in the Middle East, where we have a really kind of decreasing interest. What's our interest in the Middle East?
Well,
and aren't we supposed to be getting away from that? Aren't mm-hmm. we supposed to be doing
so
alternative?
So the American Petroleum Institute says we're now the number one producer of oil and natural gas.
So I have to say that I feel like I'm going back to my original no war, isolate. It's a horrible situation, but they got to deal with it. It isn't our situation.
Well,
it will be.
No,
when?
I think it, I think
not if
it,
we're there.
I think as much as you say that, it is our situation. It's, and I think you're on target with how you handle it. I mean, it's our situation. Obviously, if we go in, we become the bad, you know, guys in this. If somehow we enable those who really have a more moderate position or a Muslim position to go in and help them do that, I think we're far better off than if we send our own bodies.
Words. Yes, we don't know all the fighting, go in and fight stuff and bomb them and all that you hear. It's just words. We don't even know where to go in. We're fighting on the side of Iran one place, the side of Saudi Arabia on the other. We want to be friends with both of them. They're the real movers and shakers in the area. I think it should be left up to them to fight this out.
Well,
speechless. We'll get letters.
You know, the bottom line is that in some very real ways we created this situation.
Absolutely.
And we can't fix it because it's way beyond our control. What's troubling to me is this targeting of Christians all over.
Sure.
You know, and
because they're not Muslim,
right? Because they're not Muslims, and you know, killing these people because of their religious beliefs. It's, you know, the Crusades all over again, but now with much more powerful weapons. And you know, I don't think there is a way to rationally deal with this because the actors on the other side are not rational. There's no, like, you know, rules of war. There's none of that.
They do whatever they want to do. They're very rational. They know exactly what they're doing. Irrational to us.
Yeah, but in terms of diplomacy or any of that sort of stuff, there's no way you can reach.
They don't want to deal.
Right. They don't want to deal. So it's not rational in the traditional terms of war and how people settle these kinds of situations. We can't go in there with our checkbook.
You said something earlier, Libby, that I found fascinating. I think I know what you mean, but maybe you could explicate a little bit.
Okay.
Which is that we're responsible for this. And could you give us the thesis?
Sure. I mean, we, you know, the Bush administration went in and then after 9/11, and instead of going really after Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan, they went after Saddam Hussein and
destabilized
the entire area. And destabilized the entire area. Not that he was a great guy in any stretch of the imagination, but the people who head up ISIS are his former henchmen.
Hey, I hate to say I told you so.
Yeah,
but
you told us.
But I sat at this very table and I said, you know, you break it, you own it. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea why we were doing some of that when Tito died. Now, most people out there aren't old enough for that. But when Tito died, everybody said, okay, well, you know, Yugoslavia is done. The day that guy dies, it's done. It was.
It was.
It was. And we said the same thing. This is the royal we.
Right.
We said the same thing when they started mucking around with.
Because we thought that there was that they were going to take on the Western values around building a nation.
Yeah, we'll teach them
and becoming
democracy.
a democracy and emulating what we have in the United States. And they're not interested in that. They weren't interested in that.
Meanwhile, the people who are interested in that in Eastern Europe and Ukraine. Are interested in
right, and they're
values.
Getting
we're doing
ignored.
Nothing right. to support them because
and
we're
what,
so messed up. We're so involved in the Middle East where we cannot do very much right now.
And nuclear weapons are not involved in this case.
Russia has nuclear weapons.
That's my point. That's exactly my point.
Oh, you mean
that's in the Middle East? That's why we're not going.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, I think Putin thinks he's got us in a certain place.
Well, he certainly has reappeared all of a sudden. After he's been out of the headlines for a long time.
Yeah, well, they thought he had been killed. They thought there was a conspiracy theory that he was...
He's back.
Yeah, that he suddenly reappeared.
All better.
I think he was on a hike in the Appalachians with the honey.
With the girlfriend, right.
With the honey.
Right.
That's my theory.
That's always a very convenient explanation.
On a hike. All right, we're going to take a break.
Interesting word.
Yes, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation and we'll get your letters and we welcome your letters. Roundtable@WAMC.org, roundtable@WAMC.org. And we have Alan Chartok and Rosemary Armeo and Libby Post here. We welcome your comments, roundtable@WAMC.org. We also welcome you at WAMC.org/roundtable. We will be back after this short break. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel this morning, talking about a whole wide range of issues. We welcome your comments, roundtable@WAMC.org, WAMC.org. We have a few letters. I believe Alan said there are two stinking letters. I believe that was it. So let's get to those letters and then we'll fill up the mailbag because we'll go on a subject that will... get people all ticked off.
Just to explicate, it isn't that the letters themselves are stinking.
No.
It's the number, the volume.
We heard from our very good friend Don, the professor. The Arab League nations have more than sufficient manpower and resources to confront terrorism. Thus far, they have lacked the will to do so. The United States and Europe should be pressuring these nations to confront a problem they have helped to create, and that's from Don. And then Tom says, seems to me that ISIS has all sorts of examples on how to scare and kill their quote enemies. Most sociopolitical groups in the last 200 years are guilty of some genocide in quotes. Throw a dart at the globe and you'll find a guilty country. Huh. And Robert says, wars and world unrest are global economies so beaten down it may never recover. And probably a lot more yet to discover, really now, why aren't Bush and Cheney in prison? Ken says, as a U.S. veteran Vietnam vet who volunteered, I have a real problem when anyone, politicians or roundtable participants, say we need to go in there. Unless you are willing to bear arms or support a universal draft with no deferments, Dick Cheney, so everyone has some skin in the game, I'd advise caution. That's from Ken. But, Ken, I only want to ask one question. Maybe my ears. I did visit the audiologist last week. But did anybody here say we should go in?
No.
Okay, I think we're all right.
That, there seemed to be that implication. And And Catherine says, please don't forget the boat people of Vietnam. Rosemary, please be careful with misleading people with the word handful of refugees. Before 9/11, the quota for refugees was between 60 and 75,000 refugees. After 9/11, it dropped to 30,000. I don't know figures now. I work with a different immigrant population. I worked with Bosnian in the mid-90s and personally know more than many handfuls, even ones that were sent off to Germany because they were given no permanent status by Germany, or sent off from Germany because they were given no permanent status by Germany. I know 30 to 75,000 may not seem like much, but the recent arrivals are struggling to get jobs, make ends meet, and adjust the culture. Oh, so much to write, so little time off to work.
Okay.
Send me that. I want to talk more with that person.
Yeah, that person. Okay, will do. And then that's it.
All right. Let's move on to...
No, it's not it.
That Ryan. Was more than two.
Yeah, that was more than two.
No, they all came flooding in. Okay.
Okay.
The problem, says Ryan, with the stance of those who are saying put boots on the ground is that they are presupposing that violence will solve the problem. It hasn't solved anything in the Middle East for 50 years. Not more than 50. A lot more than 50 years. Rosemary, Bill Mayer says that the same things you let them out... Let them fight it out like Christians in the Middle Ages. I hate it, but I agree. It's their problem, and they have to face it. Perhaps limiting the violence we commit will help solve the problem.
Yeah. I mean, if I thought that the United States had a great plan and that all it would take was a commitment to go in and get it done, okay. But we don't know what we're doing. So you're just gonna waste lives. There's no good solution.
Okay. Thank you for your letters. Welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Now, let's talk about Hillary Rodham Clinton. She is in the state of New Hampshire this morning. She, as many newspapers are pointing out, while so far five Republicans are duking it out in New Hampshire, as well as the country as a whole for the nomination, Hillary Clinton, the sole Democrat in New Hampshire, and right now the sole candidate in the state today. So two things to bring up. Obviously, there was a very funny piece in the Daily Show that Jon Stewart did about the hours spent going over her order at Chipotle. Did you see that in Ohio?
Yes,
it was one of the funniest things I've seen for a long time. That
shouldn't leave a tip.
The conspiracy theory on the Fox News Network about what she ordered, it was very funny. Well, meanwhile, there is a book that is not hitting shelves till May 5th, but already Rand Paul has called its findings big news that will, quote, shock people and make voters, quote, question the candidacy of Hillary Rodham Clinton. The book's title pretty much tells the story, which is Clinton Cash, the untold story of how and why foreign governments and businesses helped make Bill and Hillary rich.
You know, I want someone to explain that to
me.
Can we
bring the Koch brothers in to have them chat about money?
You know, I don't even... Tell them, explain this to me. They have a charity, and they take money
from... The Clinton Foundation.
Yes, right. And they take money from foreign governments that don't have good records in human rights and use that money to do good for humanity. Explain to me what the problem is here.
Because...
I don't get it.
Because they received favors from Mrs. Clinton's State Department in return.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Right.
That's the statement being made. Right. In the
so
book.
Obama was in on it too then, because he would... Oh my God.
It asserts that foreign entities who made payments to the Clinton Foundation and to Mr. Clinton through high speaking fees received favors from Mrs. Clinton's State Department in return.
Like what?
What countries?
Right.
And Mr. Schweizer, who is the author, says we will see a pattern.
And a Republican functionary, I believe, before.
We will see a Bush financial transactions involving the Clintons that occurred contemporaneous with favorable U.S. policy decisions benefiting those providing the funds.
Well, first of all, it proves you got to get money out of politics if you can.
Yeah.
Listen to that, Supreme Court justices.
Yeah, right. And then, you know, you see governors taking massive amounts of money and people from real estate industries and people getting exemptions and doing this. This is the way this country has mm-hmm. done business. Citizens, you're exactly right, Rosemary. Citizens United lays out the path, Mark, for how to do it. Now we see all kinds of people getting into trouble here in New York State, and they all took money basically from real estate of one kind or another. And then you say, well, but then you have to go prove, if I do this, then you do that. That's not easy to do.
Right. Look, you know, just look at the Koch brothers. You want to talk about buying a party and buying votes. You just look at the Koch brothers and what the GOP is doing.
Yeah,
I mean, give me a break.
It's true, but
it's not just the GOP. The biggest, some of the biggest political contributors and PACs are all Democrats. So this is a bipartisan problem.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, it is a bipartisan problem. But, you know, for them to, for this guy, the GOP, it's once again their game plan of taking the attacks on them and turning it around mm-hmm. and attacking their opponents with the same attacks.
Well, the whole idea here is just beat up Hillary all the time mm-hmm. because right. they know she's what they've got to deal with. And they know she's very popular. So they just do their scandalize her.
It sells books, right? I mean, it sells it. What's not
no,
lose,
people,
lose sight of this?
I bet it doesn't sell well. People want to hear their politicians talk about it. They don't want to read books on it. Political books are not selling. This is all
political
people are disgusted with this.
Often. So.
Well, that's very interesting.
We'll see. Because
the Schneerson book is selling.
No, it's not doing that well.
Oh, it's not?
It's a wonderful book. It should be doing well. It's not doing that
All right. I want to just two quick things here. One is the examples. The examples in the book include a free trade agreement in Colombia that benefited a major foundation donor's natural resource investments in the South American nation, development projects in the aftermath of the Haitian earthquake in 2010, and more than $1 million in payments to Mr. Clinton by a Canadian bank and major shareholder in the Keystone XL oil pipeline around the time the project was being debated in the State Department. Okay, those are the allegations. Now,
and the State Department came out against
Canada,
the Keystone,
and
didn't it?
Haiti, which does have bad human rights, but it's so poor.
This is the point I want to get to. So, in the long lead up to Mrs. Clinton's campaign announcement, aides proved very adept in swatting down critical books as conservative propaganda, including Edward Klein's Blood Feud about tensions between the Clintons and the Obamas.
Oh, yeah, he is insane.
And Daniel Halper's Clinton Inc., The Audacious Rebuilding of a Political Machine. But Clinton Cash is potentially more unsettling, and this is what I want to talk to you about. Both because of its focused reporting, hello, New York Times, focused reporting, and because major news organizations, including The Times, The Washington Post, and Fox News, have exclusive agreements with the author to pursue the storylines found in the book.
Okay, Miss Journalist, what do you say about that?
Exclusive deals with the author, so he's going to only give certain information to each of them? Do we know any? That's very unusual.
Well, no, this is a guy comes out, I believe, Joe, correct me if I'm wrong, comes out of the Bush administration who wrote this book. I think that's his background. I may be wrong, but I think I'm right.
What's his name?
He was first of all, we should note that the first thing I want to note is the publisher of the book is owned by News Corp. So let's begin. Let's begin with that.
As is everything else.
Right. That you can't really do that. And then I'm trying to find out. I thought I had it here as to what his.
I mean, the way you've laid it out so far sounds like a campaign, not journalism.
I think what's going to happen, Rosemary, I agree with you. I think that this is not working. This is not going to work for them. It's just going to be one more screed, and it is going to be dismissed. I think the other stuff that they've been working on has been dismissed for the same reason, Benghazi and everybody else. So I think this is going to go too.
Well, Benghazi didn't work out for them because their own investigators in Congress could not find anything to make it stick.
That doesn't stop them. They just say it over and over and over.
Anyway, it looks like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs out there right now. She's running around as the queen of it all, and the other ones are all...
He's a fellow at the Hoover Institute.
Oh, great, which is a right wing. But what's interesting is if you do, you Google Clinton Cash, which I've just done, the headlines as per that article that was in the Sunday Review and the Times, from the Murdoch-backed or Murdoch-owned things like Daily Mail. Peter Schweizer's Clinton cash book could derail Hillary's 2016 campaign.
You should live so long.
Yeah, right. The National Review, crooked Clinton cash. It's Fox News, Clinton cash machine causing woes for Hillary.
Okay, but realizing this is more a topic for the Media Project, but I'm just curious about it. So then why in the New York Times article about this do you say that because of its focused reporting, meaning the book and meaning Schweizer's reporting, that... Because of its focused reporting and because major news organizations like The Times and The Washington Post and Fox News, because those three are often taken together, have exclusive agreements with the author. And what are those agreements? Yeah. To pursue the storylines found in the
book.
Well,
I think it's for the same reason that I'm sitting here now saying, wow, we all sound like such incredible, unthinking liberals. We're all saying, oh, Hillary must be right and Rupert's against her and this guy who wrote the book is against her. They want these mainstream media want to look like they're giving a balanced report. Mm-hmm. And so they are going to take seriously any focused report done by even an investigator backed by the right.
But I'd like to know more about that. That sounds like a very sort of unique thing. I mean, there are many news organizations that won't pay, for example, for for exclusive rights or interviews.
Well, we don't know that they paid. We don't
know the terms. We don't. But here you see these three bedfellows. Very strange, don't you think? Mm-hmm. Murdoch and the Times.
And the Post.
And the Post. So that is puzzling. We don't always have to say we know what they're up to on this panel. Mm-hmm. We can just say it's puzzling.
Mm-hmm. It is puzzling.
Right. The other thing, though, is that this is all going to focus on foreign stuff, foreign donations, foreign policy, and mm-hmm. people glaze over. The bulk of the public just glaze over and just want to know if the snow's going to be plowed tomorrow.
Just as they do on transparency,
I think
Hillary could really be attacked convincingly, and yet people don't really care all that much. Obama does the same thing, and we don't care all that much. We don't care about transparency.
We just don't care all that much as a country, and that comes out when, the majority of the people don't vote.
Right.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll go to the letters and then another topic or two. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. We have some interesting science news to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about hair analysis and some interesting stuff there. So
that's huge.
We will be back after the short break.
Support comes from Ichiban Japanese and Chinese Restaurant, Central Avenue, Albany, serving hibachi dinners, sushi, sashimi, curry soups, Thai, and entrees, offering daily specials, 518-432-0358. Schenectady County Historical Society, featuring research library and museum with interactive exhibits, talks, walking tours, and events for adults and children, schenectadyhistorical.org. And from Brunswick Timber Frames, building traditional timber frames for barns, homes, and additions throughout the Northeast, brunswicktimberframes.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. And we welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. Letters like these.
Okay, letters like these. Okay, today Marco Rubio denied the science that global warming is man-made. Does that disqualify him for higher office? That's from Grace. All right.
Yes.
And then Robert says, nowhere in the New York Times article was it suggested that Hillary herself took any favorable actions to assist donors. It is the same purportedly stretched logic that we use to tar her with the Benghazi tragedy. And just like with Benghazi, there's no there there. That's what it says.
Well, I thought the interesting kickoff to that article, what seemed to make it, like what was the rationale to print it, was that Rand Paul...
Is using it in the
campaign trail.
Right. Because he's got nothing else to say.
Right.
Because he needs to get ahead to the head of the pack, and the way to do that is to beat up Hillary.
Right.
We all know.
I wonder if he had an exclusive agreement.
Okay. And Jeff says, you think this is corrupt politicians, he says. You think this is a news story? and they will never fix it because they are all on the take. Regards, Jeff.
That's so sad, and that's why people don't vote. Try not to be so skeptical, Jeff.
Right, we can change things. Okay, so Bruno says, stop blaming Bush. It all started in 1913 when we partitioned the Middle East. We will pay the consequences of our greed until the fall of the American Empire. Bruno. Well, I think it started way before 1913, to tell you the truth. There were the Crusades and things of that kind.
Mm-hmm.
Ted says, we're doing well at not taking care of the people and our many issues here in the country now. Rosemary, I agree with your concerns. How many people per month, per year, would American be able to handle, quote, well?
Let's start with taking as many as Lebanon has, which is the size of one of our states. That'd be a great beginning.
One of our states.
We could handle that.
That'd be a lot of people.
No. Lebanon itself is the size of one of our states, and yet they're absorbing thousands of refugees.
Right.
So let's just equal Lebanon, say.
Hello. This topic just infuriates me, says Jennifer D. of Monroe, due to the ignorance of the majority of the U.S. population. There's so much misunderstanding of Muslims. The majority of Muslims are peace-loving people. The media only highlights the negative and extremist behavior. When will we hear about all the positive qualities? Okay, that's from Jennifer. And I guess that I think that's it, Joseph. I don't see anything else.
All right. Well, let's go to two science stories then. One having to do with hair analysis. This was the front page of the Washington Post. The FBI admits flaws in hair analysis over decades. The Justice Department and the FBI have formally acknowledged that nearly every examiner in an elite FBI forensic unit gave flawed testimony in almost all trials in which they offered evidence about criminal defendants over more than a two-decade period before 2000. Of 28 examiners with the FBI laboratory's microscopic hair comparison unit, 26 overstated forensic matches in ways that favored prosecutors, and more than 95% of the 268 trials reviewed so far. So if we're fudging the numbers a little bit, we can just say all of them, right? I mean,
You're rounding it up.
It's right.
Correct me if I'm wrong here. There were people who were executed as a result of this.
This article tries to pin 32 defendants. Saying, there may have been other evidence. It wasn't only hair evidence.
Well, so what?
Well, those
the
are the ones.
The Washington Post says that the hair evidence is what kicked it into a capital crime.
But it doesn't really matter. I mean, think about this, Rosemary. I mean, you say, well, there were other evidence. There may be an eyewitness. There was somebody who says there. But it's all cumulative in finding somebody guilty. Now, we say you can't get a fair trial in the old Soviet Union or in these other countries. You can't. The government always wins. Wait.
Right.
Just hold on a second here. We're now hearing that the FBI was fudging all of this information. That's pretty bad.
Now, I just want to make two clarifications. One is, we said 32 defendants sentenced to death. Of those, 14 have been executed or died in prison. According to the two groups who are behind the release of these numbers, the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers and the Innocence Project, of course. And also the other thing to keep in mind is that the FBI errors alone do not mean that there was not other evidence of a convict's guilt.
That's what I just said.
Right, that's what you just said. Defendants and federal state prosecutors in 46 states and the districts are being notified to determine. Okay, my question is, what's the motive? What's the motive of the FBI to fudge the numbers?
They
want to be helpful. Somebody's sitting up there. Same thing happened in Massachusetts, I believe. They're sitting up there and they want to be helpful, and they're on the same side as the prosecution, and they want to do that.
There's a map or a chart that goes with this article in the Post,
which is,
and it's amazing. Florida has 42 state defendants that's convicted, 10 on death row, one was executed, one was exonerated. The other big numbers are Pennsylvania has 21, Tennessee 16, Texas 20, five of whom were put to death. New York has 6 altogether. There's 5 state defendants and 1 federal defendant, none of whom have been exonerated, none of whom have been put to death.
I would like to point out that the FBI is doing the review now, but it wasn't like somebody in the government said, oh, we should check this. It was an investigative reporter for the Washington Post in 2012, Spencer Hsu, H-S-U is his name, who brought this to the attention of the public.
Yeah.
So whenever I hear about how we don't need investigative reporting anymore, the government will protect us, think of this.
But what's really great about this, though, in a sense, not that it's great, but at least the federal government, at least the Department of Justice and the FBI are saying, yes, we need to look at it. Under other administrations, I don't think that would be the case.
That may be so. But I also think that this is the best kind of reasoning for why we don't have
a death penalty. Good point, Alan.
I mean, honestly, I've always said that. I have different feelings about the death penalty. I'm not going to be hypocritical, but I can tell you it always comes down, and I've always said it, to this one thing. If they're innocent, you can't bring them back.
That's really a good point. And for the pat on the back that the government officials got, there's also a lot of evidence that once this became known, once the newspapers let it be known that this was a problem, they began investigating and never contacted a whole bunch of defense attorneys who deserve to be alerted right away because they get to re-argue the case. So I want to slap the government at the same time you're doing that.
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how many cases are put
back.
It could be a whole treasure trove because even if the evidence wasn't tainted, if the person who testified in one case who said the evidence was tainted and then he testified in another one, those will all go up.
When I was reading this article last night, it just kept on coming into my mind that isn't this our overall societal cultural problem with science and technology?
Sure.
Because we just look at it and say, well, we don't understand it, but we trust the people who do.
Yeah.
Now, other than murder committed in front of other people or a signed confession, how do you really know for sure? Eyewitness accounts are not reliable.
So you have a scientist.
This is not reliable.
You have a scientist that comes up and says, this is the forensic science that we have used to show that this hair was here at this time. And you're not only on the judge, the jury, and everyone involved look at that and say, okay.
Well, it's the CSI factor and the law and order factor. You know,
it's
like we all watch these shows. These guys are always crack the case, and so we tend to believe them.
Well, even in this story, which is about the failure of a forensic method, there's a whole bunch of it about, well, but now we have DNA. So they're still relying on a new science,
Okay, we have 2 minutes and 3 letters.
Four.
Okay, we have 1 minute and a half and four letters.
Okay, man, what's wrong with you liberals? Nothing that man does had any effect on the environment. Just look around you. Just ask a Native American or a buffalo. So much for Rubio's supposed high intelligence. Okay. And Philip says, dear Roundtable, regarding ISIS and other horrors, there is an answer that could alleviate many a current horror and deter many more by state terror groups. If leaders of modern nations had the sense and courage to do it and pay for it, we need an international gendarmerie funded and overseen by nations respecting the UN Declaration of Human Rights.
The UN could work, but we don't fund it and we don't support it.
Yeah.
All right. 15 seconds.
No, that's it.
Okay. Sorry. That's it. We love having you be a part of our program. Roundtable at WAMC.org. If you are driving and suddenly thinking of something and want to get back to your computer and write it down to us, you're more than welcome to. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And you can also comment on the webpage where everyone can see them, WAMC.org/roundtable. Today's post for 2015. Libby, Rosemary, Alan, thank you very much. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, guys.
We'll
be here.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.